Radio City Talk.
The A to Z of Merseyside football.
Now, John Keith has spent weeks, literally months, going through the Fs and the Football League Championships. You'll be, I don't know whether you'd be glad or not to know that they're over. I think we enjoyed them while they were there, John.
We did. But we're moving on now to the letter G, which is a rich source of material, Steve. We've got people like Louis Garcia, Norman Greenalch, Stephen Gerrard, Charlie G, Albert Geldard. I mean, there are many Bruce Grobbelaar. But we're starting the letter G's with a man who was a crowd favourite with Everton fans for his skill and total endeavour, Scotland international Jimmy Gabriel. He had an angel's name, but on the field he was anything but angelic, although his uncompromising determination to win the ball never crossed the line into malice. Jimmy Gabriel was a right half who in today's terminology would be classed as a defensive midfielder. He became one of football's most costly teenagers when new Everton manager Johnny Carey signed him as a 19-year-old from Dundee for £27,000 in March 1960, which, Steve, startling as it seems now, made him at the time the most expensive player ever to leave Scotland.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's quite a tag, isn't it?
Yeah. At that time, 27,000, March 1960, yeah. So it was a thing, quite a thing round his neck, really, but he certainly responded brilliantly. That 1959-60 season was the one in which Littlewood's founder John Moores, later Sir John, of course, came to the fore as a figure of huge influence at Goodison. He became a director and also financed Carey signings of Frank Wignall, Mickey Lill, Alan Shackleton, Tommy Ring and Roy Vernon, as well as shocking the blue and red halves of the city by selling Dave Hickson to Liverpool for £12,000. Gabriel made his home debut with an impressive display in Everton's 6-1 hammering of Chelsea shortly after his arrival. But Everton finished that campaign in 15th place without winning a single away match for the only time in their history.
That's an awful record.
It's not one to crow about.
Why were they so bad, John?
Well, they were all right at home, but they just couldn't win away. And if you think about it, the Everton team of today is hardly pulling up any trees away from home either. So maybe this recurs every so many decades.
Oh, brilliant.
Anyway, the following April, when sharing a London taxi to a Football League meeting, Carey's 122-match Everton managerial journey ended when he was sacked by Moores, who brought in Harry Kattrick as his successor from league runners-up Sheffield Wednesday. Gabriel flourished under the new boss as a 45-match ever-present in Kattrick's first season, Everton rising to finish fourth and winning away games, by the way. The following year of 1962-63, that weather-ravaged season of the Big Freeze, he missed only two games as his powerful ball-winning contribution, crowned by five goals, was a major factor in Goodison's first post-war championship, and they won it with 61 points, six ahead of Tottenham. Now, Gabriel related a story that season which provides an insight into Kattrick's less than warm man management style. Says Jimmy, "Before we played at Ipswich during the title winning season, Harry took us all to one side for a team talk. He told us not to worry if we lost because we always lost at Ipswich anyway. But then he added, 'You're all good players. We'll be sure to get fixed up at other clubs.'"
Oof!
Well, we went out and slaughtered Ipswich 3-0 because I think, and we all thought, Harry meant it.
No one wanted to move. What a threat.
Yeah,
I'll sell you all.
That was Harry. Gabriel's blonde locks were always in the heat of battle, and in 1966 he collected another medal as part of Everton's FA Cup winning side, a triumph achieved in one of Wembley's great comebacks as they recovered from 2-0 down against Sheffield Wednesday to win 3-2. The arrival of Howard Kendall the following March signalled the end of Gabriel's impressive Goodison career, and after 303 senior appearances yielding 37 goals, he made a 45,000 move to Southampton in July 1967. He later appeared for Swindon and Brentford before embarking on a series of jobs in America, punctuated by a spell on the coaching staff of Argentina, prior to becoming Bournemouth's assistant manager in March 1987. Jimmy returned to Goodison as assistant to manager Colin Harvey in June 1990, then became reserve team coach. Now, he was twice in caretaker charge of the club for one game in November 1990 and seven matches between December 1993 and January 1994, before rejoining Seattle Sounders as assistant manager in 1997. He and his wife Pat now live in retirement in Kirkland, Washington, and Jimmy Gabriel's assured of his place in Everton history, Steve.
Did you spend much time with him after he left Everton or while he was there?
I knew him as a player. And, of course, when he came back, he was on the coaching staff. And, as I say, twice in charge of the club, sitting in between full-time managers.
Do you think he wanted that role permanently at any point?
No, I don't think he did. I think Jimmy was very happy. He was a very good coach. And I think he was very happy as assistant to somebody. Mm. That's the impression I got. He virtually spelled that out when he was in charge for those periods in caretaker charge. He was happy to do it, but he was looking forward to the new manager coming in. I think that was Jimmy. Well, from an Everton star of the 20th century, we go back in our football TARDIS to the latter days of the 19th century and two Scottish brothers who between them made more than 300 Liverpool appearances. Archie and Bill Goldie, right back and left half respectively, were born in Hereford, Ayrshire. Both began their careers at Clyde and they played together in the Liverpool team regularly for two seasons between 1898 and 1900. They were part of a big football family. Another brother, John, played for Fulham, Glossop, Bury, Kilmarnock, Dundee and Clyde, either side of the First World War, while his son, John, appeared for Preston and Accrington Stanley during the 1920s. Now, Archie and Bill helped Liverpool to league runners-up spot behind Aston Villa and to the FA Cup semi-final in 1898-99. And in 1901, Bill was a 34-match ever present in the club's first title-winning team under Tom Watson. During an Anfield career spanning more than 5 years, Bill built a reputation as a wing half of precise passing skills, but also with a great ball-winning ability thanks to his tenacious tackling. He left for Fulham in December 1903 after 174 Liverpool appearances, later played for Leicester Fosse. During his spell there, he was summoned to appear before an FA disciplinary committee, only for his heavy Scottish accent to put a spoke into the wheels of football justice. The committee chairman couldn't understand a word he said and had to send for an interpreter.
Perhaps they should try that these days, shouldn't they? Turn up and
there's a lesson there for some of our friends across the border. If you're summoned before the football beak.
Plead ignorance.
Brother Archie joined Liverpool from Clyde for a £50 fee in June 1895 and was an early and unusual example of a footballing defender. Not for him, the long clearance, but rather a pass aim for a teammate to launch a move. He won a second division championship medal with Liverpool in 1896 and was a first team regular for five seasons, partnering both Billy Dunlop and Tom Wilkie, before appearing for two other Merseyside clubs, Bootle and New Brighton Tower. He also had spells with Small Heath and Crewe before retiring in 1905 and taking a job at the BSA factory in Birmingham. Now, other examples of brothers playing for Liverpool are Matt and Hugh McQueen in the 1890s and Walter and Harold Wadsworth during the 1920s. Six pair of brothers have played together for Everton, all prior to the First World War. Edgar and Albert Chadwick, Bert and Jack Sharp, Robert and William Barmer, George and David Wilson, Andrew and Tom Browell, and Jack and Tom Page. So there we are. Quite a few brothers for Everton, not quite so many for Liverpool.
I can honestly say I could not have named any of those brothers. And it's amazing how you don't see brothers playing for the same team anymore.
Exactly.
Are there teams in the Premier League that have got brothers in?
They don't come immediately to mind.
If you know, let us know at Radio City Talk. John, we just started the Bs. The Bs, the Gs.
Well, the Bee Gees. started the Gs and we've got so much more to come.
There's a lot to come, isn't it? This is going to be longer than the Fs.
It's going to be long, list. Steve.
brilliant stuff. The A to Z of Merseyside football each and every week at this time. John Keith comes in and shares his wisdom and we're on to a classic letter G. There's Gerrard's, there's Grays, there's all sorts, and it's on the way. So join us next week. Thank you for your company, John.
Thank you, Steve.
The kickoff. Rock, sport, and talk. Radio City Talk.